Welcome, everybody, to the Dyslexically Successful podcast. I'm so excited to share the stories of these individuals, their stories of triumph and encouragement and inspiration to move through some really challenging things in their lives, whether it is learning to read or even just graduating from school, getting a job, being able to find their strengths that they have within them to be successful. And absolutely, I want to foster an understanding that their success is not in spite of their dyslexia, but it is because of it. And so I'm so glad to have you listening to these stories today. Today on the Dyslexically Successful podcast, we are going to be speaking with Zach Snyder. He is a college student at Metro State University here in Denver, Colorado, but he has a wealth of knowledge and experience since being diagnosed with dyslexia in the fifth grade. He has learned so much about himself and really has taken the things that he has learned in school and in soccer and sports and has applied it to his life, in fact, shaping his career direction. So very excited to hear what Zach has to say. He's quite an inspirational speaker, and I think you'll enjoy listening to his story as well. Welcome to the Dyslexically Successful podcast, and it's Christine Robinault here, and today I am talking with Zach. Zach, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, I've been thinking about this. I'm really excited to talk with you specifically. Well, first, because I know you and I've heard your story, but two, I think you offer a really unique perspective to our students and our parents, even more so than some of the older adult dyslexic learners, because you're closer to their kids in age. And you have the perspective of like growing up and then like seeing as an adult how dyslexia has been a struggle for you and a good thing too. I just think you're in a great place right now to see both sides of it.
Yeah. I mean, when I was growing up, like I kind of just realized like when I, like with my family, you know, like I just kind of realized like I was a little bit slower on some of the things like that, that my family could do. So like my brother, who was a whiz academic, my sister was pretty good too. And so then when I started like having these struggles in school, my mom, who is a kindergarten teacher, she decided to have me go get tested for dyslexia, and that was like fifth grade. And so we found out I had dyslexia and stuff like that. And I'm kind of just making this long story short kind of thing because there's a lot that goes into it. But going through that, like it makes like, especially growing up, like seeing like the accommodations you can get, especially in public schools, they really save you to an extent, because I was stuck doing Scantrons in middle school and high school, and I was just having this hard time. And then once they realized, well, he can't do Scantrons, they just made it so I didn't have to write on Scantrons anymore, and my test scores actually went up because like I didn't have to deal with the tiny little bubbles, the tiny little letters smushed up with 120 of those little things on one side of a paper. And so that when we were like discussing accommodations with teachers, like they were very open and helpful about it, especially at the schools I went to, and even at the college I'm at now, they're doing really great things for me. And I could, if I'm struggling with one thing, like, hey, like I need help with this one thing, is there an accommodation I can get for it? And I shoot an email, he'll respond within 30 minutes, like saying, yeah, like we can totally go do that. And that's really important because like, as people grow up, when people are like, how am I going to be doing that? And how am I going to be handling this in college? How am I going to be doing all these things? Like I had to go to a very large school. I go to Metro. And so that has a lot of students in it. So you're like, well, how are these I guess I want to say guidance counselors, but they're not really guidance counselors. I guess they're accommodation counselors. I don't know what the name of it is, but it's like they try to make that personal connection with you. And so when people are like, oh my gosh, you're going to like this bigger school, like how am I going to get this connection with the teachers like I've had in my past, like in my high schools and stuff. And because that's how I did good in high school, is like I made those connections with those teachers. But even with the accommodations counselor and like the teachers that I have there.
keep going. Well, hold on.
Okay.
Keep going. It just had a little glitch. Sorry for that.
Okay. That's okay. So like we had like even for like some of my teachers, like for second semester now, I went and sorry, my dog's knocking on the door. Oh. one of my teachers, she found out her husband was dyslexic at like age 30 or 35. And so she wanted me to walk with her to the next class, and we could discuss like what's best for me and how I can continue going forward in the class. And like teachers really can go out of the way for you as long as you're just trying to like make an effort to go do it. Because like if you're just going to sit back there and like not talk about it, and then like maybe midterm comes up and you get handed a Scantron, you tell them like, oh, I can't use the Scantron, I'm dyslexic. Well, to an extent, like, yeah, like that you shouldn't have to use it, but you should also make the effort to go talk to the teacher about it too, and just be like, hey, is there anything else I can do? Because I think communication is key, and that, like, that's the one thing that I learned, and like one thing my parents really engraved in me, like when I was in middle school, they really started telling me, hey, you got to start advocating for yourself, and you got to tell teachers like what's best for you, and like just tell them like what you're struggling with. And like that's one thing, like that's one of many things I credit them with teaching me at a young age, is like how to accommodate for myself and like speak for myself. Because sometimes now you're gonna have kids that like, and parents that don't know what to do and don't know how to help their child. Because I was fortunate, because I had my mother who's a teacher to help me and like kind of guide me and like what I need to do. And so like for teachers and parents that don't know how to do that, like I would sit down with academic counselors, teachers, and just be like, hey, what's best for my student? Like, where do we see him or her struggling like the most, you know, and try to find accommodations that fit those specific areas so they can be boosted up. Cause like for me, for the longest time, I had horrible time with the tracing for long division. I had a hard time like just tracing, you know, going down next step. And so instead of I forget what kind of paper we were using, but I just switched to graph paper, and the teacher was okay with that, because like I was able to follow it and do all these things. And that was like kind of like, that's how we found out, like I was one of the reasons that we found out I was dyslexic too, was in fifth grade, we were doing that long division kind of stuff. And that's really kind of what tipped off my parents, I guess.
No, I think that's
the teacher at the time wasn't super supportive. And so like, I guess what I'd say for the parents, is like, just try to, you know, advocate for your son or daughter, and just really try to figure out like how you can help them. And sometimes, you know, that might be some kind of Google search, and just be like, hey, my kid has dyslexia, how can I do this? Or, you know, they're like the podcast from Christine, you know, just take everything into account, like what I say and what the other podcast guests say, you know, and like do all these things and maybe that can help guide you to better suit your child, or even you if you're in college, because it's definitely communication, that's what I would say. So
I think that's great. You covered a lot of my questions already there, Zach. What about, did you always feel,
what'd you say?
I'm sorry. Did you always feel comfortable advocating for yourself?
I never felt uncomfortable advocating for myself, because this is going to sound like really weird, but teachers have a job and it's supposed to, like, it's supposed to help us learn, and it's supposed to help us grow as students. And I mean, I'm not saying like you have to go and be like, this is what I demand and stuff like that. I mean, you obviously should be polite about it, and you should really just talk to them about what the root causes of your struggles are. Because I guess that's not completely true, because like when we found out I was dyslexic in fifth grade, the teacher was very rude, and for a kid that just found out he was dyslexic and didn't really know what it was and really kind of just thought it was like something that made you dumb, which isn't true at all, but I didn't know. And so when my mother and I went to go to the school to go talk to this teacher, she accused me of cheating, and she accused me of doing all these things that weren't true. And so that was kind of hard, because they really just try to take a jab at your character. And that was like the one time I really felt uncomfortable doing it. And, you know, and that was kind of the tough part. But, and it really kind of, I guess the impact of those events really just kind of influenced how I learned and how I perceived my academic capabilities all the way up through college. I always just felt like after that one, you know, event with that teacher, I really just felt like, man, like, I don't think I can do it. Like, I feel pretty dumb, you know, like, and all these things. And even though that's not true at all, like, because once you kind of just get inside your head, you know, it's like you're just down the rabbit hole, and you're like, okay, well then I can't do this if I can't do that, you know? And to the point, you just got to take a step back, you know, and be like, you know, I can do this. And that's one thing I learned in college, is like, I would stress so much about bio, and I'd stress so much about philosophy and like all these other classes. But here at the end of the semester, I got like a 3.24, which is the highest my GPA has ever been, I think, ever. And I think that's the real takeaway from me. I mean, like, I'm not someone like if you're gonna ask me in fifth grade, hey, when you go to college, you're gonna get pretty much like, you're gonna get a 3.23, you're gonna get into accepted into this really good school in Florida, you're gonna do all these things, and I wouldn't have believed you. I wouldn't have believed you, because here I am struggling to read from the textbook, right? And so that's where I kind of just like, you know what, Zach, like, advocating for yourself is the most important thing. And it might put you in awkward situations, but you know what's best for you. And they should help you so you can be the best academic student, or the best student, the best co-worker, or the best person you can be. And that, honestly, having that mindset, having a positive mindset going, like, or instead of like, I don't know if they're going to accommodate everything, like, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do? Like, instead of having that mindset, I'm like, I'm just going to go and do the best I can, and I'm going to try to go get all the things that I can get from the school, and so I can be the best I can be. And to be honest, they want to help you, because the higher your GPA looks, the better that the school looks.
That's a good point.
And so it's like one of those things where it's like, if they have someone with academic disabilities, that's like having like above a 3.0, and if someone's like, hey, I want to be going, like, if say like there's a prospective college student or a high school student, like, hey, like, I want to go where I'm going to get the most support, and then they find the average GPA of the students there. Like, wow, this is really good. And then maybe there's a way to like find out like the average ones with like accommodations, and that's high. Then you're like, wow, this is the thing that's like the school for me. And so schools are really going to try to work with you to try to figure out how the best to suit you in your academic, I guess, not struggles, but academic journey.
I like that. Schools are going to try to help you. What did you say?
I said schools are going to try to help you because the better your GPA looks, the better the school looks.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I'm writing notes as you are talking on a picture my daughter drew.
I think. But
okay, I'll put those in the show notes. All these little nuggets of truth that you are saying, because it's so valuable. And I think as a parent, I know as a parent, all you see is what's in front of you and the struggle that your child is having right now today. And that seems really mm-hmm. overwhelming as a parent. And perhaps, you know, the student as in kindergarten, first grade, whatever, may not be able to appreciate that perspective. But here you are saying, like, what would I tell my past self? You know, I would tell my past self that you can do this, that here I am in college achieving all of this. And that is really yeah. powerful for parents to understand that even though the struggle is today with all of these things, the perseverance, finding the right learning path, getting on that learning journey, you can not only get through, not only get by, but do very well. Like, that's so powerful. Thank you for saying all of those things.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say if it wasn't true. And I think for me, I kind of learned that from, I guess I learned it first or in conjunction with my athletics. Cause like I did the state soccer team for Colorado for a couple of years, and I did all these things that were, tough. And so like I guess that what I learned from me being dyslexic was just never give up. And so like when I'd be going to these tournaments for that for all these things, and you play against some top players in states, you just learn, like, you know, you can't quit. And so like I try to put that into my academics too, because it's like, yeah, maybe you don't want to read the 16-page double-sided annotate thing that you're supposed to annotate, but you could listen to it, you know, like, you know what book it's from, so why don't you just listen to it? And that's what the teacher that I was talking about earlier, the one that walked with me to her class, her name is Dr. Seal, and she is fantastic, and I am so grateful for her, because she's like, hey, this is where the book is from, and she looks at me specifically. So if you want to get an audiobook, you definitely could listen to it. And one of those things where she's like, and so that's like one thing like I appreciate. It's because, like, you know, like if, especially if your child is younger, like maybe they don't have like the athletic stuff, they don't have the prior academic stuff, and like maybe they're in first or second grade, like how are students going to advocate for themselves at that point? Because I don't want to know, because maybe they don't know what dyslexia is still, you know, because they're still pretty young, or they don't have a notion of like, how does this truly affect me? But the parent is stuck there, you know, trying to do what's best for their child. And it's like, at the end of the day, you kind of have to be like, you know, these podcasts like are going to help them, because you because it just takes prior experience, and it takes strength to reach out and look for answers, especially for something that you don't know about. And that's something I really admire, is that you have these parents now that are like trying to help their students, trying to help their students, their children, and try to be the best that they can, because they want to see their kids succeed. And it's going to be tough. Like the first few years, they were tough. But like once you start to get to understand like how your child's brain works, I guess is a way to put it, it and like what works for them and what doesn't, then you'll be able to help them more, I guess. And that just takes time to understand too, because unfortunately not every dyslexic brain is the same. And so like there's different things that people struggle with. And that's just the unfortunate part. And so it's like, it'll take time to figure out like, hey, what's best for my child. But once you find that out, like what I did, you'll see a big difference. And at the end of the day, like you could look back, like maybe they're a freshman or junior in high school, and they'd be like, you know, this was all that struggle was worth it, because now I get to see my child succeed. Maybe I get to see them go to the college of their dreams, or start the business that they always wanted to start, or go to the trade school that they are always wanted to attend, or heck, astronomical difference. And you could even as parents see, like, you wouldn't have thought, like, I don't think my parents would have thought, like, they've always believed in me, but like I would have been so academic in college, like we always knew I was smart and like I and bright. It just took me some time, you know. And that's one thing that I've learned, is like it takes time to be great, right? And if it was easy, it wouldn't be worth it, as cliche as that sounds. Like that's just what I've learned, is like if it was easy, it wouldn't be worth it, compared to, you know, I would rather take the hard road than the easy road most of the times, I feel like. But that's just me, because and I feel like this hard road was kind of laid in front of me at a young age, and I was like, all right, well, gotta get going. You know, you can't stop,
right?
So
yeah, no, that's very true. And I think there are things though that obviously do come a little easier for you, like soccer, like,
sure,
you know, so I think you can kind of use like that motivation and drive for something that is fun and motivating for you. And then you realize, like you said, that hard work does pay off, and you're 100% correct. You need to have experiences, and that's what we're drawing from. And so if you are a child or someone who is always experiencing like failure always and never getting that little bit of positive reinforcement from wherever it is, it does weigh on you. You know, the perceived, you said you perceived your academic capabilities to be low based off of that interaction with the teacher. So you know, that just speaks to how valuable that interaction between the student and teacher is, and impactful for many years if somebody doesn't believe, because you're right, it's just your perceived idea of what is going on, not really reality.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's more prominent in elementary school, truthfully, because like in middle school, high school, like you see how many different teachers a day for like an hour, right? So, but like in elementary school, you're stuck with that teacher for 7-8 hours a day. And so if this teacher isn't going to provide you the right support or the right, I guess, motivation or uplift, like, I want to say uplifting, or I guess confidence, we'll say confidence, the right confidence, then how do you expect your child to be like motivated to go keep doing these things if the teacher's not gonna be like, hey, how can I help you? Here's how we can help you be successful. Or instead they're gonna be like, you know, like that really sucks that you got a D on this test. Well, better luck next time. Mm. You know, like how do you suspect like a child to be like, has this actually to be like motivated to learn when all they see is like these mountains in front of them, and then you just got to keep climbing those mountains, and it's like you think you're done climbing mountains, and look, there's a bigger mountain. You're just like, how many mountains are there? And that's really the hard part about that kind of stuff is like, at the end of the day, like I think I should have moved schools in fifth grade, but I didn't. But like, it's just finding the right support. And And that's where I really think like making those connections with the teachers and just trying your best to be as positive with the child as you can be, because unfortunately, the child will probably spend more time at school than they do at home. And so it's like, how do you expect, you know, like you to know everything that goes on during the day, and how do you expect them to be like, and like without being able to see what goes on during the day, how are you going to be able to support them truly? Because like, you're not there with them 24/7. Like that's where the advocating for yourself really comes in. I mean, obviously like during later years, but like, that's just kind of the tough part. And that's what I would say like is kind of tough about that kind of stuff. Cause like when I was saying earlier, like staying with the teacher for 7-8 hours, then like, and then they're not going to be supportive of it. And like, that's, to me, that's like setting yourself up for failure, because it's like, then you just kind of get that preconceived mindset of like, I'm not going to be able to do this because this, or like maybe even the sense of anxiety because you don't want to be humiliated. Mm-hmm. And then that just makes everything worse because no one wants to be anxious about going to school and being humiliated by the adult, not by the other students. I mean, both are bad, but I feel like being humiliated by the adults is a little bit worse because, you know, they're an adult. They should have the notion of, hey, I probably shouldn't say this to this kind of student because they're struggling academically.
Right. So, that's true. Those are all really good points. Because I can see it in my own son too. He is 11 and currently in the 6th grade, and I can attest to the fact that in kindergarten, first grade, all throughout, I was horribly afraid of what was going to happen in middle school and what will happen in high school when he can't read, you know, at grade level. He can't write anywhere near grade level, and, you know, went to parent-teacher conference in the fall and was so excited to hear how well he was doing with the accommodations in place, with his extra support from special education. But, you know, all of the teachers just spoke to, you know, all the things that he was doing well and asked for what they could do to help him. And I was, it was really the first year that I felt like the things that he is doing in special education was being carried over into general education. Up until this point, I've always felt like SPED and Gen Ed were two separate things.
Oh, absolutely.
But how can that really support our child? Like, we need SPED supporting the Gen Ed. It can't just happen in the closed SPED classroom, right? So did you feel like they were separate?
So I guess in elementary school, yeah, elementary school is definitely separate. Like, we had to go into these temp buildings, you know, to get that kind of special ed support. And then middle school, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't remember a lot from middle school. I remember meeting with my counselor a couple times and everything was kind of like, okay. But in high school was the big difference. High school, Miss Klein, who I love, I don't think I would have passed high school if it wasn't, or graduate high school if it wasn't for her, just because of the school I went to. The way that they did it there, what I thought I think school should really take it into account. And I guess it, like, part of it too is just like the environment of high school. You know, you're going to different classes, you're going here. The special ed office was integrated in with the history department, right? And so like, I could go in to the special ed and be like, hey, like, I need some help here, or is it okay if I take a test in here? They're like, yeah, sure. And it's not like, well, there was only one teacher to support you. There was four or five teachers in there, or sometimes even six, depending if one of them was in a meeting. that would be in there to support you. And like, and it's not like you just had a relationship with one, you had a relationship with every single one. And that, to me, played a major role in like how I did in high school, just because like you could go have this relationship with this, his name was Mark Yeager, and he was the funniest guy I think I've ever met, and he would help with like math stuff and like and he was just an awesome guy to talk to. And so like if you were struggling and like Miss Klein was in a meeting or something like that, you could go talk to him, or you know, vice versa, like you could go talk to Miss Klein if Mr. Yeager was in a meeting. And they were all there to support you, and they didn't care like if they had classes with you or not, they just wanted to see you succeed. And that to me was the most important part, because I was like, here I am, like, just trying my best to be successful academically, and you have this whole team behind you instead of just one or two teachers. You have five or six, and you have some of these teachers too would follow along with other students that needed some extra help that wasn't I don't think that was dyslexia related, but I cannot say. But they would help you there too, because they know you. And so like, if like, I remember one, we were in cooking class in high school. And I mean, you could pretty much call me an Iron Chef at this point, but like, it was one of those things where I would have struggles with one of these things. And we had one of those special ed teachers in there, and she'd step aside and be like, hey, do you need help with that? I'm like, yeah. And so she would help me. And it's not like she just helped the special ed kids. She helped every kid, right? Every kid that needed help, everybody that needed to figure out how to whisk this properly or answer this question on this problem properly or something like that. And it's like, to me, that was the most important part, was like having that extra support there where you didn't have to go to the teacher. You had the, I see it as the valuable middleman. I guess people view the middleman as someone that isn't, like, I guess if you look at economically, the middleman isn't something that's like preconceived as good, because like, you know, they up the prices. But like the middleman in academic standpoint is fantastic, because you can tell them what they need, they can relay it to the teacher, and then if the teacher doesn't agree, they'll fight for you to get those accommodations. And like, that to me was important as heck, because I was like, there's some things I'd struggle with, and those teachers helped me get to what I needed to do.
Yeah, that's really cool. I would say the best word for that would be resource. It was a resource for you. And we can have resources within ourselves, or we can have resources outside of ourselves. And with all the things going on in high school, it probably could be very challenging to navigate that system, but super that this school had identified this as a value to the students and to helping you with your learning process, and definitely made this resource available to you guys. So I think that's awesome, and cool that you also felt that too. Because sometimes I think, you know, offering assistance, you know, or does the child perceive that as, oh, I don't know, why is everybody trying to help me? Or, but you really appreciated that help and support.
Yeah. And it's like one of those things too, where like, if someone doesn't like want as much help as say another student that's kind of struggling with something similar, that you could be like, hey, I want to be a little bit more independent, but I want, like, if I need something, I want someone to come to. Mm-hmm. And like, they would have accommodated for that. They would have. And like, that's the amazing thing. Like, they would have respected that and be like, yeah, absolutely. Well, if you need anything, we're here, and you are more than welcome to come whenever you need it. And that's just kind of like those kind of teachers are. Like, they want to see you do your best. And so if your best is kind of like going off on your own, then heck, go off on your own, right?
Right. No, I think that's important. And like you said, just identifying, you know, initially you may not have known what the accommodations were or which accommodations might help you. So that's where that kind of team approach can can be so beneficial because they have experienced other students in the past with maybe similar things. And so they have like a whole bank of ideas to draw from, or, you know, so we can, you learn as you go and you add in things as parents and as the students. Did you always attend your IEP meetings with your parents?
Yes. There was one IEP meeting I did not attend. That was due to injury. But yeah, I'd say I was there like 99% of the time. I rolled my hip flexor and broke my ischial tuberosity. So I was on crutches and I didn't want to get up. So my parents, my mother went to the IEP meeting for me. Because there'd be even times, like especially in high school, where my parents didn't come. Like I was just so, I knew myself so well. I could literally just sit in there. And like I was 18 my senior year, so I could sit for myself. But like I could that's part of like the accommodating for myself. Like I could sit there and be like, hey, this is what I need, this is what is best for me. And like even like when my parents did come too, it's like I did most of the talking. They were just there as the legal part of it.
How wonderful. Great. You know, I think that's a really, even though it might seem scary at first, I think that's important as early on in the process as you can have your child attend the meeting with you. And from my experience, most schools want the student to be there as well to begin this process. I know from my son too, he has a difficult time kind of verbally talking with somebody, especially when it's kind of emotionally charged. So if he's feeling a little bit anxious or worried about something, for him to verbalize what he needs is difficult. But avoiding that completely doesn't make it get better. So, you know, we've started with just, he would either write or text me what he wanted to say. And then we now have come to the point with practice in an IEP meeting that he can verbalize to the team what he needs. So I think, again, you know, recognizing this might be a little scary at first, but guiding them along.
Yeah. And that's, I've always been a verbal type of guy. I've always been someone who can speak really well and influence someone, even if it's completely wrong, which I see that as a talent. but it's like one of those things where I don't really know, truthfully. I think like for me, my definite struggle was academics, because soccer wise, like athletics, like, and usually what I've heard too is like some, like if your head is kind of struggling in one area, it tends to succeed more in other areas. I definitely think my dyslexia helped me succeed more in athletics, just because like I was able to see things differently than other kids, and I was able to conceive things more. I guess I was able to conceive things better than what most of my team were able to conceive. And so I was one of those things where.
Yeah, that's what the last guest said too, that he can see strategy. He can see the moves on the field before the others can see it. So I don't know if that is part of your strength, but absolutely. That's wonderful. And let's see how is this dyslexia kind of shaping your career choice, or what area of study you're doing and what you hope to do in the future?
Truthfully, I tend not to let I don't let my dyslexia define me, so I don't think that's really affecting my career choice. I think my dyslexia is going to help me with my career, but I think my overall goal is, like, I've had some injuries with soccer, and they weren't easy injuries, so that's really kind of, that really affected my head, and so I'm really interested about how stress affects the brain and how trauma affects the brain. And that I think I want to go into behavioral neuropsychology because I want to try to figure out how to help people that have seen those traumas, have seen those stressors in their life, and their brain just isn't working right. So, I guess you could say dyslexia is kind of, because, you know, with the wiring in your brain and stuff like that, dyslexia, I don't see it as a disability. I see it as an empowerment because, like, because the way I think of it, then everyone learns, I guess, the way I see it, which isn't completely true already, but, you know, I see it as everyone else is kind of cookie cutter. But I am like the, you know, like the ninja cookie cutter. And like, you have like all these amazing abilities, right? And it just makes me feel more confident because I see it as something that I have persevered through and something, you know, that like in life when, you know, there's other things that come around and like, and there's other things that come up, but like the perseverance that has taught you will always, you know, just be there. Mm-hmm. And I think as a career choice, like I'm interested in these things because I think the brain is a really cool thing. I also think it's really messed up too. Just because like all the different things that can come up through those kind of stressors and all those traumas and how it can affect your brain. But I really think that at the end of the day, like I'd love to do something with dyslexic people. But I think I would really want to help like the people that have been affected by those traumas and I don't know what the word for it is. I'm having a hard time. I want to help the people that are struggling with the things I struggled through and had to persevere through so they don't have to go through it alone. I guess so that could be taken into account with dyslexia too, because like you're not so like, because you shouldn't have to go through those things alone and that you should have a support system. And I think that's what these podcasts are really great for too. It's like, because even if you're a parent, you know, in Virginia or Florida and you're listening to these podcasts because you're like, oh my gosh, like how am I going to get the support from my kid? But I can't go out to Colorado to go to the meetings or any of these things. Like, I guarantee you, and I are having the same people that are doing these podcasts are attending those meetings. And so you're really just, you're saving yourself time, but you get a more in-depth conversation with these people so you can figure out what's best for your child.
Absolutely. So that's it. Yeah, the more knowledge, the better. I agree with that. I think, you know, when I didn't learn that I was dyslexic until my son was diagnosed with dyslexia. So I was 34, 35 years old. And everything started to make a whole lot more sense to me at that point. But I didn't have any support in school. And I still felt the anxiety that you were speaking about. So even though I didn't have a diagnosis, those feelings of not understanding and not feeling comfortable and then not knowing that help could be provided to me. So you had to kind of make things up as you went and see what worked for you. And then, like you said, there's always another mountain. And you had to figure out your own learning style, which is going to come through trial and error. And what could have been easier for me if I would have had some support? I think that I would have liked that. So, and then as far as the neuroscience goes,
Yeah,
I think that would have been good. Here's a quote. If the human brain were so simple that we could understand it, it would be so simple that we couldn't, it's missing here, that we couldn't use it, right? So if our brain was so simple to understand, we wouldn't have enough brain power to really think about understanding it. And there's so many different layers of our brain. You know, our cognitive processes in our prefrontal cortex only makes up about 10 to 15% of our full brain function. The rest of our brain is functioning in these subcortical areas, including our emotions, including our, you know, fight or protective responses. And those are all programs that we don't really have conscious access to. So when we talk about a brain injury, or you talk about PTSD, you talk about dyslexia, we're actually talking all about the same thing. We're talking about disruptive neural pathways. And how do we make new pathways? Well, thankfully, our brain is neuroplastic. That's encouraging for me as a physical therapist. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a job.
Seriously.
Right? and so we think about, you know, no matter who you are, you struggle with something. We, as dyslexics, just happen to struggle with a lot of things and a lot more potentially earlier on in life. But I don't care who you are. You're struggling with something in your life right now, and it may or may not be able to be fixed through talk therapy or just pushing yourself through it because of these neural pathways that may or may not be well myelinated for you to access. So I'm so very excited for you, because I have come to this understanding now after 19 years of being a physical therapist and doing a lot of self-study on the brain. And here you are in college having these notions of how this is all fitting together. So in 20 years from now, Zach, you are going to be helping so many people with your ideas. I can't even. I'm telling you now that you're going to just be changing people's lives for the better. So I'm so excited for you and your career path.
That's what I'm shooting for. Because I don't like sitting around and doing nothing. I mean, except for like on heavy school days when you're just like, hey, I don't really feel like reading these kind of things or listening to these type of things, where you're like, you still gotta do it, it's not gonna go anywhere, and you just gotta push through it. But that's really like prior experiences, like what we were talking about, that really, like, that really just, it makes you just view things differently, I guess. And like, I guess when we were talking about the different neural pathways, like there was, we were learning this last week in my psych class, that the brain, even as you age, creates new, I forgot the name of it, but it creates new, like, new nerves, or not new nerves, but like it creates more, memories. Like, it creates the ability to has the ability to make like more space for memories as you get older. And so what my teacher was talking about, she's like, you know, I used to be so afraid of like Alzheimer's and stuff like that. But then she's like, I realized, like, when she was growing up, then she's like, I realized that there's a lot worse things that could happen. And I was like, yeah, like, that's true. She's like, you could literally have like these illnesses, like where your brain functions perfectly fine, but your body doesn't respond to it. And so like, you're there up there, but you're not there anywhere else. And I'm like, that's a very scary thing to think about. And like, if I'm able to help people like understand these things and help them like understand like how to best help their body and their mind, because I think that those things are very interdependent on one another, the body and the mind. It's like if something's wrong with your body, like, you know, something's gonna be wrong like up there. Because like, when I was doing soccer, I keep in mind, like, I played soccer for 16 years. I had a surgery and something in my body just felt off. Like, my you'll like this, my hamstrings kind of like aren't like firing super well, just because like how many surgeries I've had from soccer and stuff like that. They're just kind of like, my body just relies on different muscles rather than the hamstrings, apparently. That's what I'm told. And so it's like, when I was playing, like, something felt off. And so that really, like, oh my gosh, like, I can't do this. Like, I'm like, my body's telling me, hey, there's something. My body's telling me, like, so there's something wrong. But my mind can like understand that. And so so then it makes me just think differently, I guess. So I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, we're all interconnected, and to think that in physical therapy school, you'd learn about the central nervous system compared to the peripheral nervous system, and you're taught that they're like two separate issues, yeah. And that's kind of what you're talking about here, like a peripheral injury after the surgeries compared to like how you're feeling. But really, it's all connected. Like your central nervous system of your brain, it basically you're like a brain on legs, and you're it's all connected. And more and more and more research is coming, whether we talk about the HPA axis or how the gut biome affects your brain and thinking, inflammation, systemic inflammation through so many different factors is going to be a cause of chronic disease. And one of the things that, you know, medicine is wonderful today for emergency medicine or fixing something like in the moment, but as far as these long-term conditions, I think we really have done a disservice to our population. And here, you know, you're talking about neuroscience is a really good way to understand this and thinking about how this is all connected. And you're right, as a dyslexic learner, you have a really kind of inside perspective of how these changes affect you from like that big picture standpoint. And that's going to be the same for any sort of neurological changes. And it's hard to understand sometimes when you're in the moment and things are happening, how it is all related, because you're just focusing on like in, you know, so many little tiny things and everything, these little symptoms don't seem to really have any sort of connection. But I think as a dyslexic learner, especially, we have the ability to see this bigger picture and can start to make these connections and can start explaining it to other people. The training I'm going through right now, I won't talk a lot about it, is really neurosensory motor reflex integration. Because that reflex layer is that bottom layer. And if our reflexes aren't well integrated, we're struggling so much to get up to the next level, which we use through experience and our sensory experiences. Yeah. Then we have to be able to start understanding our emotions, which is our limbic system and the diacephalon of our brain. You know, and so all of these things are related, and if we don't have well integrated reflexes, you're going to end up falling back down to those reflexive behaviors. And so in children, especially, when our prefrontal cortex is going to take up to about 25 years to really mature, our children are sitting so much closer to that limbic brain, but yet we're trying to access this wizard brain, access your wizard brain. But we need to first be working in this lizard brain area, because we can't ignore that. And I think that's definitely true for dyslexic learners. When we hit this barrier, that we hit this threshold, wherever it is, and we fall right into fight or flight or freeze, it's really hard for us to now access our cognitive abilities because we're stuck in this reflexive level. Yeah. So, right, and I've used meditation to help me better integrate this. Like right now, at this moment, as my daughter is coming in and out of the room and making a lot of noise, prior to me doing my meditation, I might have been very reactive and very yelling at her, which wouldn't really serve anybody's purpose, but that's just kind of me getting triggered and hitting my threshold and falling right into that fight or flight response. But through meditation and through creating better neural pathways in my brain, I've been able to develop more skills. So I guess, you know, this is really what we need to be doing with neuroscience, is understanding where these thresholds are and what these reflexes are, and how to support that. So anyway, that's my soapbox.
That's a very good soapbox. I've definitely learned I could have used some meditation growing up, but I did not. But I definitely think, like, at the end of the what we were talking about in my intro to psych class, is like how good meditation actually is for the brain. And going back to, like, I guess dyslexia and the neural pathways, we're talking about studying for tests. And and she's like, my teacher is like, this is going to sound really ironic, but the more you study, the better you do, because the more you read through something, the more the neural pathways build, and so like you're able to memorize and like understand these concepts better, and so the more you study, the more you're going to understand these things. And like, well, that's a given. But then once she started explaining it, and then she's like, and remember, like, it's always better to study before going to bed rather than going out in the middle of the day. And then if to never study past like a reasonable time, because you'll do better going to bed earlier than to stay up later and studying, because you won't be able to fully conceive these concepts because of how tired you are. And so I'm like, that makes sense too, because it's like if you're staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning to study for a psych exam that you have at an 8 a.m. class, you have to drive 45 minutes to get to class, then you got to get ready, you're just like, you're probably not going to understand these things because you're getting 3 or 4 hours of sleep at most, right? And so it's like, and so when I hear people saying like, yeah, I'm studying for my stats midterm, and like I'm staying up till like 3 o'clock in the morning to study for it, then I have the test the next day, I'm like, I just tell them like, you're gonna set yourself up for failure then, because like if you're not getting the proper sleep, the proper nutrition for your brain, then you're not gonna be able to fully use it, I guess, to an extent is the way that I would say it. And so it's like, and so that brings up another good point for, you know, dyslexic students, like make sure like you're taking like I am not a doctor, and I will never say I am a doctor, but definitely take supplements to help, you know, with brain function and like brain food kind of stuff, just so your mind is at its peak, right? And so whether that's supplements, meditation, all these things, like that's what I would recommend doing, because it's like, heck, like if you're struggling learning, but you're also not supplementing your brain, like that's not helping you. It's probably slowing you down a little bit because your brain isn't fully, you know, I don't supplied with its nutrients. I don't know if that's the way to put it, but you get what I'm saying now.
No, I think it's really important. I mean, it's kind of like your environment. So whether all the environmental factors, your sleep, your nutrition, exercise and movement, meditation, Dr. Dan Siegel speaks about 7 different things that you need to help support you as a person. He talks about it like on a plate. But sleep is super important for sure for all of our brain functions. And like you said, if you are unsure about what supplements to take, then obviously consult with your physician. I think in general, omega-3 fatty acids are anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. Those are going to help support brain function, as opposed to omega-6 fatty acids, which are, you know, found in grains, are going to be more inflammatory to our brain just in general. But, you know, go ahead and do your own research on that. But you're absolutely right. That does 100% affect how much or how well our brain works. So if you're already kind of at a lower ability or a more challenging ability because of dyslexia, because of ADD, because of whatever, and then you put on these environmental factors on top of it that challenge you more, it's no wonder why things are even more difficult. So supporting our children, supporting ourselves with our healthy sleep habits, healthy nutrition, movement and exercise, some sort of meditation or just slowing down, turning off the world has been so impactful. We're going to close here as I have a parent meeting that I run on Saturday mornings. But what message would you, you've shared many messages with the parents and students, but is there anything like take home that you really want people to hear?
What you're going through now is only temporary. Because success will come. I think like it will be hard, but success will come, and it will be something that will make everything that you went through make sense, and it'll make it so you can look back and be like, you know, I did this for my child, or I did this for me, and I did it. You could be graduating college or whatever you decide to do. And you can look back and be like, you know what? 10 years ago, I wouldn't have believed this. 20 years ago, I wouldn't have believed this, that I'm doing this now. And I think it's the most important thing that this will only help you grow more as you get older and as you understand completely what you went through. It'll be best. That's what I would say.
I think that's great advice, and that very well may be what I title this episode of the podcast.
Well, I try.
Well, if you want to hear more from Zach and you're in the Denver area, he is going to be on the Dyslexically Successful panel that will be on the 29th of February coming up here. And if you're interested in being on my podcast, look for in the show notes for more information about that. And thank you so much, Zach, for spending time with us today. I really appreciate.
Is it okay if I put my email in there in case anyone wants to shoot me an email?
Yeah.
I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. So it's just sharkbaitsnyder@gmail.com. It's sharkbaitsnyder@gmail.com. And if you have any questions, just shoot me an email. I'll be more than happy to answer them. So yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
So for today's quick tip, we're going to actually listen to a recording that I made for students. So if you're a parent listening, go ahead and listen to this segment first and see if it would be applicable to your child. There are some visuals that I'm using in the recording, and that is going to be found on the YouTube channel, or I'll go ahead and link in the show notes to the video if you would rather your child watch it to get the full effect. So this little segment is just talking about perception versus reality. And sometimes as a dyslexic learner or as a child with ADD, ADHD, we might have a difficult time really seeing how things really are. I mean, really all of us are that way. I don't think that's unique to these learning challenges at all, especially as a younger person, especially as someone who doesn't have a lot of experiences to draw from. So I just talk a little bit about my personal experience. And like I said, I use a visual to help get the point across. So enjoy.
Hi, my name's Christine, and I am a pediatric physical therapist, and I'm a mom, and I work with kids to do hard things every day. And I wanted to come on here to talk with you today because I think that there might be some things that you might be feeling are kind of hard or difficult or going on in your life right now. And I just wanted to talk with you a little bit about what you might be able to do to make yourself feel better and to be able to feel safe and feel like, yeah, you can do this, because you totally can. And I know you can. And I know that you can because I've done it. And I've had similar experiences as you when I was growing up, feeling overwhelmed, feeling kind of anxious in class, or feeling like I don't understand, or I'm the only one who doesn't understand, or I'm the only one who is not being able to listen right now. Why am I like that? What's wrong with me? And I want to say that nothing is wrong with you. Know that you are really doing the best that you can right now, and that we can learn how to feel a little bit better with ourselves so that we can do a little bit better in class, so that we can listen a little bit better in class. So let's think about a time when you are able to learn really well, when it's easy for you to learn. Is there something that you really like to learn about? Maybe it's reading Harry Potter, or maybe it's learning about how to do something with your Legos, or maybe a sport that you like. Like, you can learn things. You've gotten this far in school, so you've learned tons of things. When you first started school, you didn't know how to read or count, or even probably the names of the letters, and then you learned all those things. So you have the ability to learn new things. You have the ability to do hard things. But first you have to feel safe about it. So what's safety? Like right now, check in with yourself. Ask yourself if you feel safe. Like, I feel safe. I feel safe. I'm in my home right now, in my office. There's nothing going on that's dangerous for me, so I feel safe. I am safe. And that's not only is it really safe right here, right now, but I also have a perception of safety. Well, what's a perception? I am taking in information from my environment using my eyes, my ears, my nose, if I were to smell fire, how I feel from inside myself, how I feel talking to you, and I feel safe. Sometimes, though, even though there's no real danger, I might not feel safe. That happens in school, and that happened to me in school. I was in class, and I started to feel like I didn't know what was going on, or they were moving really fast, or I didn't understand what the teacher was saying, and that doesn't feel safe to me. I started to feel like my throat is closing up. I started to feel kind of hot. I started to feel like I wanted to get out of there. And sometimes, most of the time, I just kind of cried. So I don't know if that's ever been for you, but know that those are like, that's your body sensing that you don't feel safe right now. And so right now, I'll just say, look, just be curious about that. Just think about when you're in school, what is it about being in school that might not make you feel safe? Maybe you might think that the teacher doesn't like you. That would make me feel unsafe. But I'm going to ask, do you know that for sure? Do you really know that the teacher doesn't like you? That's your perception of it. That's what you think. But is that really the case? Your thought that you can't get this, that this is too hard. Again, that's your perception of it. So let me talk to you a little bit more about perception. I got a cup here from a local dentist office, and hopefully you can see, what color is that water? It looks pretty blue, purple. I don't know if I would drink that. Would you drink that? Yeah, it doesn't look, I wonder what's in that water. It doesn't look like it's a good color. So the cup is pink, but what's inside is purple. Doesn't look safe to me. But is the water really purple? Nope. The water is water. But my perception of it was that that water was purple. Well, it's just one of those color-changing cups. So the water's not purple at all. The water's clear and it's safe. I can drink this water. But I'm looking at it inside this cup. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's safe or not. And to me, it looks kind of strange. And I might feel uncomfortable about drinking that water. But once I can see that it's okay, it's normal, it's clear water, I can smell, it's the safe water, I can taste it, I can use my senses to understand that I am safe and this is the safe water to drink. So that's just a little example about how my perception of the water was wrong. It really wasn't purple water. It was just a purple changing cup. So again, thinking about, does your teacher really not like you? As a parent, as a teacher myself, that's not true, but that's your perception of it. So maybe sitting down with your teacher and your mom or dad or your parents and having a discussion about feelings and how you feel in class might be good, and kind of get that out and let them know how you're feeling. And because the teacher's perception his or her perception might also be wrong. They might be thinking that you're not listening because you just don't want to listen. Or they might think that you are getting up and walking around the classroom because you're just trying to be disruptive. Is that true? That's not true. You're feeling uncomfortable. You're feeling like you can't learn right now. Like you can't, this is too much. You're feeling overwhelmed. So the teacher's perception is wrong as well. So we need to feel safe. We need to feel and be in a calm and alert state to listen and learn. And that is super important for our teachers to know, for our parents to know, but especially for you to know. And I want you to know that your school wants you to be safe. You're in a safe place, but your perception of safety is not there. If you're getting up, moving around, unable to listen, feeling like you can't learn, we need to first get you to a feeling that you feel safe. The next thing I wanted to talk with you today about things in school is have to do things and want to do things. So in life, at home, at school, when you grow up, at work, there's going to be things that you don't really want to do that might seem boring, or I did this yesterday, or what's the point about this? But know that sometimes it's just something that we have to do. And usually those things that we have to do help us get to do the things that we want to do. So for instance, at home, I don't want to have to wash the dishes or clean the bathrooms or clean up my room, but I have to do those things to have a clean house because it's really important to me and important to my family that we live in a clean space. So that's a value that I have, that I want to live in a clean space. And so in order to live in a clean space, I have to do the work. So then I can do the things that I want to do, like come online and talk with you today. So those things that we have to do at school, we have to sit still, we have to listen to the teacher, we have to raise our hand, may all be things that we don't want to do. We would rather be doing playing video games, reading a book, fidgeting with whatever. But we have to do them because it's important to have a safe space for other people. Being quiet in class helps other kids learn. And listening to the teacher helps me learn, helps other kids learn. So those are things that we have to do to help help make a good learning environment for the whole class. And just something to think about, you know, are you doing the best you can when you're in class? You're in a safe space. Are you doing, you know, the things that the teacher wants you to do right now? And there are often things that you have to do, even though you may not want to do it. But we can do, we can really put forth our best effort in the moment to being aware of that. I understand that I don't want to do this right now, but it's something that I have to do to help support my class, to help support my friends. So just be curious and notice about those things, because if you can start to draw our attention to it and just observe, you are probably a really good observer of other kids, of other adults, of people when you're out like playing on the playground. Really good to notice what other kids are doing. And that's great. I want to, you know, congratulate you and say that's cool that you can pay attention to what other kids are doing. And we can use that same skill of observation with our own bodies and with our own feelings inside. So just, you know, be curious about what's going on with me today. How am I feeling today? Am I feeling relaxed? Am I feeling calm? Am I ready to learn? And if I'm not, what do I need to feel okay and ready to learn? So if I'm not feeling okay right now, I'm feeling nervous, I'm feeling anxious, what do I need to feel better and ready to learn? And just be curious about that. So some things you can do in the moment to help you calm down and be ready to learn is just use your breath. And so we're gonna do a little exercise here with your hand. and with your breathing. So you can use your hand up in the air if you'd like, or you may place it on your lap or on the table or wherever you are. I'll use my hand up in the air so that you can see it. And I'll use my other hand like a marker. You can pick what color marker you want to use. I'll pick purple because I really like purple. I'm going to take that purple marker and I'm going to draw up my hand, up each finger and down, staying connected with my finger, staying connected and just noticing how that feels. Might tickle a little. And when you're ready, I'm going to have you start to take some breaths in and out. And so as we go up the finger in and out, down the finger in and down. If you feel like you're going too fast or you're getting through all of your fingers, slow it down and really connect and feel what you feel as you touch your skin. One more. Okay, so let's use that curious observation and just check in with yourself and see how you're feeling right now after doing that. Are you feeling more relaxed in your body? Are you feeling like you're able to move a little more slowly and calmly? That's how I'm feeling. So thank you for doing that with me. And know that if you're feeling a little bit anxious or excited in class, checking in with yourself and noticing that, hey, I might need to take a break right now. And I want to get up and move around, but I've got to sit still. And so something that you can do to help yourself relax is to do that hand tracing breath. And you don't have to do it up in the air. You can do it down on your lap. You could do it on your table in front of you. And nobody has to know that you're doing it. You can just use that as a tool to help yourself come back to that calm and alert space for learning, for listening, because your perception of what's going on, that you're in danger and that you're feeling overwhelmed right now, is not really what's going on in the room. That we can help come back to that calm and alert state so that we can listen to the teacher's words and that we can feel safe and keep moving forward through our day. So I hope that was helpful for you. If you're not feeling safe in school, if something's not feeling like you're ready to learn, I want you to go and tell your mom or dad right now that I don't feel good in school, and have that conversation. And let's see if we can work through some of those things and figure out what you need to feel safe and calm and alert in school. Thanks for joining me.